Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Veterans in Ag podcast, brought to you by AGD Consulting. I'm your host, Mike DeSop, and here we explore the stories and insights from the military veteran and supporter communities who are leading the way for vets in agribusiness, ag tech, and agripreneurship. We swap stories, talk ag, and show how the grassroots nature of the ag community can be a natural fit for the military veteran. The wine starts the conversation. It brings people in and sets them up for what we're really trying to do, which is support our community through agriculture. This was a beautifully simple explanation by one of our guests this week, describing how a for-profit entity can not only enable a nonprofit effort, but can also serve as a funnel to drive like-minded individuals towards a common goal. We have two guests on the podcast this week, Ben Martin and Leanne Babcock, both with the Dauntless Veterans Foundation. Ben was an early guest on the podcast, episode 8, and is the founder and winemaker at Dauntless Wine Company, a veteran-owned and operated winery in the Willamette Valley of Oregon, whose ultimate mission is to give back to warriors in need by offering them a place to learn about agriculture. Leanne Babcock grew up in Oregon's Willamette Valley, picking blueberries and plums on her grandfather's orchard. She enlisted in the U.S. Air Force in 2003, working on emergency vehicles, before being commissioned as an officer several years later, and began that chapter in her career as a logistician. She's currently supporting logistics and engineering efforts as an individual mobilized augmentee assigned to North American Aerospace Defense Command in Colorado. Our conversation picks up with Ben describing what it was like having Leanne first show up to one of their wine tastings in the Dauntless Wine Company, and making her intentions clear that she wanted to support Dauntless's efforts to help veterans in the Willamette Valley through this nonprofit foundation. Have a listen to this episode and find out this team's early struggles with starting a nonprofit in a post-pandemic world, the interplay between a for-profit entity and a foundation, and the story behind how Dauntless's largest donor one year was a 9-year-old boy. Enjoy.
Just talking to Leanne, you find out right away that she's dedicated. She has a lot of capabilities, core competencies, and she was definitely within our target audience, you know, and she resonated with us and we resonated with her, and it just became this perfect fit. And we decided right from the get-go, like, how can we work together? You know, when we first met that Memorial Day weekend, you know, we're nobodies really at the time. And I was like, well, sorry, Leanne, I can't pay you anything. Like, I got no money. Like, I don't, I appreciate your help, but it's like, just so you know, you're coming into something that's like not even, the foundation isn't even built yet. And she didn't shirk away from that. You know, I was completely transparent and honest with her right out of the gate. And she just like, no problem, let's do it. And so it's been growing ever since because of that. Like she was saying, you know, she's coming back from Northern California, from her deployments down there, working at our tasting room on the weekends and going back down there. And so she's been dedicated to this mission ever since the get-go. And she really kind of sees the importance of what we're doing, even though we're still on the nonprofit side, relatively small compared to most nonprofits. We're doing good work locally, really being a resource beyond monetary. You know, we do award grants, but just awarding or providing that knowledge to say, this is what we did. And so my wife and I purchased property through the USDA first time farmer loan. And we wanted to go through that red tape. I love the USDA, and they do really outstanding work. But I feel like sometimes the marketing department doesn't necessarily talk to the guys that actually give money, because the marketing department or the people that were messaging, you know, we went down to the Farmer Veteran Coalition conference in Austin in 2019, talked to a bunch of USDA people. And they're like, you are a perfect fit. This is the programs. Here, take this brochure, call your people, blah, blah, blah. We call those people, and they're all economists. They're not farmers. And they're like, let's see the budget. What's your budget look like? And so we actually got denied initially. We had to appeal. We had to go and fight for our farm. You know, we had to go and take it to the regional director and say, this is what we want to do. And they finally approved us. And thankfully, the head guy was an Army vet, because I think that kind of got us a little clout there. But we wanted to go through that red tape so we understood the process. You know, we understood that we could start mentoring other veterans. Like, this is what you will be up against, and this is how you should angle your application. You know, when I put in my application, I thought because they require 3 years of experience to qualify, they'll waive 1 year for veteran status, but they won't, or 1 year for education, but they won't waive 2 years total. So you have to have 2 years of experience in whatever agricultural crop you're looking for. And I thought that was going to be the biggest hurdle for me because I had kind of this collection of different experiences from different vineyards all together. And they didn't really care about that as much as they cared about the budget. You know, like, are you going to be able to pay this loan back? And so that was something I wasn't prepared for as much as I should have been. So going through that process now, I have that knowledge and aptitude to tell other veterans, hey, this is what you're going to have to do. And this is what you're going to have to like show the USDA. And that was important for me because, you know, like Leanne was saying, we want to build that network. We want to build networks across the state and eventually potentially across the country as this thing grows, where people could tap into other people's knowledge, other farmers' knowledge, and see how they can overcome the challenges that are presented to them, especially as a first-time farmer. So Leanne has been a great resource, and we're happy to have her on our team. You know, it's like I'm not quite sure where we would be if we didn't have her help from the get-go. And she understood the nonprofit world as well, and understanding, you know, how to like reach out to donors and give them the information that they want to see. Because, you know, I come from an entrepreneurial background, kind of a capitalist mindset, where I feel like if I'm asking for money, I give a product in return. But, you know, when I got into nonprofit work, I always felt a little weird, like, hey, just give me money and I'm going to do the service for our community. It was a weird angle for me to kind of realign my brain to. So Leanne already was there. She understood how to talk to donors, and it has been a great resource ever since.
There was a nugget in there, Ben, that I want to make sure people heard. If you're a military service member, even remotely interested in agriculture, and your transition is looming, right, 18 months, even 2 years out, if you can find a veteran in the space that you want to transition to, specifically within agriculture, and just be present as much as you can in person or remotely, like Leanne, like you did, or some combination of that. I can't think of a veteran that would not provide that time and resource. I would love to have somebody like you, Leanne, in the agricultural sense of development space that was a transitioning veteran that wanted to learn more about this place, to come in and hang out and learn and support in whatever way they could for a year, 2 years, right? So there are more veterans than not that would take on another veteran interested in that space to provide that education. So there are folks out there, I think your nonprofit, we'll get into this, is beginning to sort of lay that expectation down for people and provide resource. But man, I want to drive that point home because I think it's super, super important to start that process early and to try to plug into a group or an organization like the Dauntless Veteran Foundation to start to see what that might look like in real terms. I still have this sort of burning question about, and maybe this one's for you, Leanne, what is unique about a nonprofit structure that is best suited for the kind of work you all are looking to do in this particular space? I know nothing about nonprofits, so help me understand why this is a preferred structure.
Anytime you have funds associated from donors, you have to show the obligation or the application of that money. And when you give that to someone, you're accounting for everything. And at this point, we're very conservative and deliberate by only being able to execute our grant program at this point. Our board, by the way, is phenomenal. Their experience, their background, their passion. And then we could not do any of this without Carrie making sure all of us are at least functioning in the direction we need to go, because our brains are just going so fast that sometimes they're not going in the same direction. We're going different ways. And she just glues us. So between the staff that works for the winery and the nonprofit board, and then every single volunteer and person that comes to our events helps solidify that. By having a board, you have independent thinking, but people that are all working toward the same mission, the same vision, the same strategic goals. So without a large board of directors, because we're still a working board as a public nonprofit and a federal 501c3, as a volunteer executive director, by not taking a paycheck, that allows me to continue to be neutral and unbiased and in an advisory capacity with Ben, so that we run interface. He's with the board, I'm a lot with the donors, and then we have a united front moving forward. So as we continue to grow in the financial side and be able to get through a lot of those yet again struggles as a nonprofit that you asked, with those government hurdles, between the Department of Veteran Affairs, technical training, maybe SkillBridge down the road, but just being able to offer our own programs, that's going to take a lot of bandwidth. And we'll need help from either an advisory council or from other nonprofits to kind of band with us, which we've been approached by a couple recently. That's been really phenomenal, but especially the way that they find us. So those are kind of the areas that you look at and why a nonprofit offers that flexibility, because you're writing your own story. You're creating your bylaws. So long as you meet your federal reporting requirements with the state and the feds, and you can continue to reach back to what's your mission, what's your vision, what's your strategic plan. And as a logistician, that's how my brain operates. If you have a plan, then you can deviate it. If you've got a checklist as somebody down on the ground, and I think of that as an instructor in contingency operations, all right, this isn't going to work. How are we going to do this thing to that thing? And then watch how that blends between Dauntless Wine Company as that platform to be able to get out there and have those conversations. And then with the Veteran Foundation and our grant recipients. So they're the ones telling our story. And maybe this is preemptive, but this year we had $300,000 in applications in need across 24 applicants, and that was nearly triple our first cycle. And that doesn't seem like a lot for many nonprofits, because they're just getting hammered all the time. But for us, that was huge. And it told us that there was a need out there that was far greater than what we could provide. So that's kind of ammunition for the next couple of years from a strategic standpoint. How will these other opportunities that are presenting themselves to us that we're not seeking out, they're coming to us. How are we going to be able to connect them through that sphere of influence and become and bigger, but then also still have that operational span of control that we would like to maintain, because Dauntless is connected between Dauntless Wine Company and Dauntless Veteran Foundation. So we're not completely separate. We're very much working together.
The structure of the nonprofit was important for us because, you know, if people are giving us money, you know, to then give it back into the community, there is the incentive is the tax break for the donor, you know. And so that was the main reason why we had to kind of set that up, is because we can't expect, as a for-profit business, being Dauntless Wine Company, that we'd get a lot of donations, so to speak, and there'd be a tangible benefit if that sum was going to be large. You know, if they're going to donate more than, let's say, $1,000 or $2,003, that, you know, getting that tax write-off for those donors is big, you know. And so that was the main, I guess, reason why, to attract more donors, we had to be a 501c3, because they wanted to get that return, or I guess that deduction off their taxes too. So there are those kind of tangible benefits there for the donors, that we, you know, having the 501c3 was important, because as a for-profit, we couldn't offer that. I mean, we could give them wine and say thank you, but that only goes so far. But like Leanne was saying, having the winery in conjunction with the nonprofit, the winery starts the conversation, you know, being in the tasting room, having a little social lubricant, and then like being able to talk to people and they like say, hey, you know, we got this great product and this great mission and this great story, but also look at the good things that we're doing. So it's like the for-profit brings people in, and it kind of sets them up for what we're actually really trying to do behind the scenes, is like really support our communities through agriculture.
Got it. Okay. that helps understand a little bit about the why. And I think that just strategically makes a ton of sense. Leanne, you said that you had $300,000 in application or need come in last year through 24 applicants. How did that eventually break down? And what kinds of things were done with that money through those recipients?
And then I'll have Ben tag on the back end of this. So those applications that came in, there's a structure, right? There's a checklist. Hey, we'll go through each one of these. And the board does the difficult job of trying to rack and stack every single one of these. They finish it, and then I go in the back end completely blind and just start asking all the questions. Why? Because you know every single one of these people needs this. But what is going to make the impact for what we're doing? Because we're removing a lot of that red tape, because we're not a federal grant program with a separate organization. We are our own entity. These people making decisions about where that funding is going to go, knowing that at the end of the year, we'll have an event where we recognize those donors and all the grant recipients. So we can say, this is where your funds are going directly into practice, into the pockets of veterans, so that they can continue pursuing their dreams. Ben, when these applications were coming in and you and the board were sitting down, can you share a little bit about what that was like for you and the team trying to make this?
Yeah, it's always the most exciting time of the year to get all these applications in and read these stories. But it's also the most difficult time of year because you start resonating with every individual. And me being the president and kind of being in their shoes at one point, I want to give everybody money. I want to give all of our money away all the time. Like, and the board has to kind of reel me in a lot of the time, because it's like, I have a soft spot, because it was a $5,000 grant that got us started when we had no money or no income or anything. And without that kind of, I know $5,000 doesn't maybe sound like a whole lot in the grand scheme of things, but it's one of those force multipliers. When you need it, you need it. And it's like that $5,000 grant from the Farmer Veteran Coalition got us the money to buy the glass, buy the labels, buy the cork to bottle our first vintage. And so that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to look at the aspiring kind of, I wouldn't say startup, but just kind of at the beginning stage individual that's either looking to get into farming or expand their current operation. And we look at, like, the money that we give, How does this affect their broader community? You know, this money that we give, is this going to feed 10, 20, 100, 200 people? And so we look at a lot of different aspects to the application, and all the applications are super solid. And it's always so hard to choose between them. And so we have a grading rubric and that we kind of go through, and that kind of cuts out, you know, the top 10%. And then we really dive into that 10% and say, out of these 10%, who is impacting their community the most? And that's what we want. And we want to have that amplify and help donors. Basically, that's the return to the donors, that we are trying to build sustainable local agriculture around the donors that give us money. And so, like, what's the community impact? It kind of is really the tiebreaker. And Leanne comes in after the board kind of puts their grades together, offers her opinion on a couple of, like, different points that we might not have seen or missed. So it's good to have an unbiased perspective coming in at the end there, at the end of the grading. And then we award it out. And so that's our main program right now, is our agricultural grant. We do it about one or two times a year, usually in the spring and the fall, kind of the bookends of the growing season. And we really just try to make as much of a local impact as possible.
Of the applications that you were able to fund, was it an even distribution of funds across the awards that you gave? How many applicants received funds, and generally, how much did you guys give out?
We awarded, I think, 6 applicants in total, we kind of broke it down on, we asked them for line items, like, okay, your total ask was this. Show us the line items, because we wanted to be able to spread the money out as much as possible. And let's say we had a lot of, like, ranchers kind of asking for money. And they wanted bison shoots, they wanted water troughs, they wanted a lot, you know, a lot of different things, which is understandable. But it's like, okay, we're going to look at the biggest ticket item, and we're going to get that for you. And then we're going to move to this next candidate and look at what their ask is. Because the top rated applicant that we all graded the highest was probably the lowest ask. And it wasn't about the money that we rated him so high, is what he was trying to do. He wanted like close to $5,000 for some tools and implements and some irrigation equipment for his half acre, like kind of victory garden that he's building, that he's going to bring veterans onto. So his ask wasn't huge, but his mission and his impact was probably the highest. And so that's where we rated him the highest. We awarded him the full amount. And I would say all in all, we probably the average award was probably around $6,000 or $7,000 per individual.
Okay. And Leanne, when you come in sort of at the end of, what kinds of things specifically are you looking for in that independent review?
So I don't look at how the board per se is scoring them individually. I'm looking at the aggregate number. So I'll go through like the top 10 there. And then I look at every single application because I'm interested. You see the basic demographic data, name, where they're located, branch of service. And then you go from there. And it's the same thing with Ben, like reading every single one of these, you get very invested in what they're doing. What I was interested in the most this year is finding out how they discovered our grant. And if they had a link to another nonprofit that we started making these connections with and networks with over the last 18 months. So we had our winner in Colorado was connected to Veterans and Farmers, and we poured wine at their barn party last year and got connected with them through Chatfield Farms. In West Virginia, that was through another Farmer Veterans Coalition connection. Our recipient up in Washington was through one of our previous people from the year before, and there's another nonprofit up in Washington that's connected to. So I'm starting to see how those webs are becoming launch points for us to be able to help, because some of these other nonprofits have these big federal grants and USDA ones because they're a little bit more established on that end, but they have staff, they have a board, they've got advisory councils, they have all of these additional things that we don't have quite yet, because we're not ready to grow that direction. So being able to connect with them is a way for us to help meet the needs of other veterans that are trying to get into grant programs. And we can help fill that gap where we're at that point. So really that's my interest level too. And then making sure that I'm reaching out to their executive director stating, hey, thank you so much for letting us be a part of your event, or come be present and learn more about your organization. As a result of that, you sharing the grant, one of them is winning. So that's creating and solidifying that network, because we're all working together. We're not, this isn't a competition. I think a lot of it, when you're going out to ask donors for funds and you're seeing what they're doing, I take what Ben gives me and what the board has and be like, all right, we'll reach out to this particular company and see if they offer a veteran military discount, or if there's some other way that we could, you know, get a little bit more squeeze from the funds that we're going to be able to provide them. And I have no problem asking for money. I grew up selling candy in front of grocery stores as a campfire girl and being told no repeatedly. So also being a junior officer, going through trying to do different inspections, like getting told, no, we don't have this, we can't do it. Also working for the government. Oh, you don't have enough money to bring all your airmen in for training. Figure out how to get them trained in some other creative way. So tell me no all day long, but I will give you a story about these veterans that applied for a grant. And as soon as you provide that donation, you will know at the end of the year when you're filing your taxes, you'll feel good about what you donated to us, because it's going directly back into the pockets. We're not taking paychecks. We're helping our brothers and sisters in arms.
Do you see Farmer Veteran Coalition as a, because they also offer a grant for veteran farmers, do you see them as a competitor or more of a force multiplier?
Saying I don't look at the Farmer Veteran Coalition as a competitor. We are aligned entirely on what we're trying to do, and we're trying to go for the same goal. And if anything, we could consider them potentially a partner, you know. And I've been involved in multiple conversations with starting a state chapter here in Oregon. And so, like, the Farmer Veteran Coalition is great, and they have a lot more resources and a lot more funds than we do. And there's a lot of different opportunities out there. And so, you know, I push, you know, through mentorship, you know, when I talk to vets, I say, hey, check out the Farmer Veteran Coalition, check them out. They have the resources and the aptitude and the monies to, like, really help. And so, I would say our application is definitely not as robust as theirs. You know, ours is pretty open because we're trying to make that entry point more accessible. So I would say our application is easier than the Farmer Veteran Coalition because that we aren't asking for a full blown business plan like they do. So it's just two different methods and two different ideas on how to do the same mission and the same goal. So it's kind of like the different branches within the military. It's just two different branches fighting for the same cause.
And a veteran could apply for both.
Yes, that's absolutely yes.
Right. Correct. There's nothing that would say that they couldn't do there. And what kind of messaging do you craft around that ask once you've determined who you want to talk to next? So Ben or Leanne, I mean, however you guys want to tackle that, but that would be, I'm really interested in that.
We try not to duplicate efforts. So we use Slack as a way to communicate back and forth between my work schedule when I'm traveling, doing Air Force work, Harvest, all the entities that our board has to deal with as well. And from a strategic standpoint, when we look at if we can apply for these grants from these organizations, we could submit this information. So I have some plug and play stuff I can apply in, and I'll just like pump out a grant. We just got our renewal last night for Nike. We were selected to receive an annual donation from Nike for what we're doing. When it comes to the big agriculture piece, and that was not an easy application to get through with Nike, and they're 10 minutes down the street from my house. But thankfully Ken has a good contact and he was helping to shepherd that process. But with Cargill or American Ag Credit, Enterprise, I'm thinking Progressive, all of the FedEx, all the big things that Ben has attached through Dauntless Wine Company. And then what aspect of that can Dauntless Veteran Foundation potentially tie into as well? So many of these major grants and then the companies want us to answer questions we just don't have enough data for yet, or we haven't raised enough funds, or we don't have employees. So it kind of whittles us away from the beginning of that process, or stating that since we don't have any formal programs that we wouldn't be able to qualify for it because they couldn't see how that program would continue to grow. So we're kind of at this transitional time frame, and when we end up thinking next week, we'll be able to talk a little bit more about these grants. And it's time talking to these companies as well, kind of like setting up to have a conversation with you, hoping that this would help launch as that platform for us to have a little bit more bandwidth. Maybe somebody's listening to this and be like, yeah, I'd really like to talk to them about what's going on, and maybe help shape that with some extra funds or potential sponsorships or networking that could make this more beneficial for their next round of grants, or perhaps give them a body that would like to help us develop some of these. So I see it from that standpoint. Ben, what else?
Yeah. Well, another hurdle that I feel like on the nonprofit side that we're up against is that a lot of these grant opportunities that do exist for nonprofits, usually these awards do not allow funds to be granted. So if the funds that they give you, they want it to be put into a program of some sort. They don't want it to be re-granted to somebody else. Right now, our main program is our agricultural grant, where we're just giving money back to veterans. And so with that, we are trying to develop some programs right now, which include a veteran viticulture program, where we get veterans out onto the vineyards and kind of get their hands dirty and kind of introduce them to what we're doing on the for-profit side. One of our previous grant winners here in Oregon, he graduated with a master's from Oregon State in viticulture. He's been willing to come back and, like, it kind of comes full circle, you know, he's going to come back and help manage that program fellow Marine as well. And so we have all these kind of pieces in place. We just need to kind of need a little more push on them. So the Veteran Viticulture Program is one thing that we're looking at doing. We're also talking about doing a Victory Gardens by Veterans program, where we have a program where essentially applicants, they don't have to be veterans. They come to us and they apply like, hey, I'm interested in starting a Victory Garden at my place of residence, wherever that might be. And we go and we basically do an outdoor renovation for them where we build a Victory Garden. And that kind of the concept behind that is that we're trying to bring the Victory Garden back into the mind's eye for the public, because like Leanne was saying earlier, throughout both World Wars and even into the 50s, maybe even the 60s, Victory Gardens were an integral part to food security. And a lot of food was grown locally by people in their own gardens. And so I feel like for the kind of continuity of food security and the in the, you know, troubles we face ahead as a society, that Victory Gardens are going to be integral to that as well. So we're trying to build, kind of like she said, the interdependent network of farmers, whether that's a full-blown farmer farming 100 acres or somebody in their backyard, you know, growing potatoes and tomatoes and that sort of thing. So we have some programs in mind. It's just really just kind of manpower and capital, you know, great equalizers and all things.
Both of those programs, the Veteran Viticultural Program or the Veteran Victory Garden, would allow you to take funds from organizations that require that money go directly into a program.
Yeah,
right? That would open up your donor base, so to speak.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, Leanne, what would, when you're looking at donors specifically for this cause, what's an ideal donor for you? If someone's listening to this, who would you most like want to hear from, and why?
A company, entity, or another foundation, like a private foundation that looks to invest its funds, that is interested in helping to watch us build those funds through the course of 1 to 3 years to help provide the financial support to launch an initial program, kind of like your test batch. You always want to do proof of concept. So we were able to get the financial backing to start these programs to help provide a stipend to those people who are providing their time, either as an employee or a previous grant recipient. That would help attract the opportunity for us to advertise, develop that program, and then partner with some of these other nonprofits that are looking to do the educational and academic experiences. And that's how they're getting the funding behind individual or private donating versus full federal USDA or grants through that program. So I think there's a delicate balance on how you could reach out to them. The other nonprofits that I've networked with over the last 18 to 24 months have had that one angel investor or organization or angel donor drop in, plant a bunch of funds, and then they had certain stipulations they wanted you to meet and then execute. So I see that as being good as a starting point, because otherwise, if we go up to a big corporate level donor, there is a lot of red tape. So I think over the next 1 to 3 years, that's potentially where we could see that coming through, because I hope when I retire from the Air Force that we're at that point where I can just run with this, or we've got additional assistance where we can have maybe the staff. There might be staff people to help us execute and do this, because I love seeing our grant recipients in action, going out to visit them. And I don't need to or want to be reimbursed for that. So it just gives us that flexibility. If we had somebody come in that met that criteria, would be beneficial, and then allow us and help partner with us to make these $300,000 in need. How else could we make this happen? You know, how we help 24 applicants, because our largest single donor as an individual this year was a 9-year-old.
It's true. It's true.
No.
How so? Wait, what's the story there? Like an actual cash donation? Like what?
His mom came in with a check for, what was it, $14,000, Ben?
No, it was $17,000. He came in with $17,000.
All cash donations that she had to get in from the silent auction. This young farmer, and he was a little shy, but his parents were there with him. But his mom reached out to us through LinkedIn and maybe Facebook, and Carrie sent me a message asking if I could kind of run this down. And it turned into him wanting to be able to donate proceeds from his harvest back to a veteran cause. And then they ended up having a silent auction with a concert. And unfortunately, it was like right in the thick of harvest. I wasn't able to go. None of us were able to be physically there. But this venue was literally probably 5 miles down the road from the tasting room in downtown. So it immediately was hyper local, and it connected us to a community of people that we hadn't potentially reached before. And so all of these donations going in donated into the form of one check from this one young individual. And he didn't have a ton of veterans in his family, so his connection was different, but it was amazing to have that. People are like, why would this young person, what an example he's setting in his community to show that his hard work and then his parents supporting him was definitely helping. And I think that that donation kind of solidified that if we were to have this person do one thing, how many other people in pockets around there could also be doing that to have us as their beneficiary. We've had many events I've gone to where we've been the beneficiary. It's been a casino night and I'm pouring wine and we're doing raffles and 50% is going back to Dauntless, or we're doing a wine and wad where people are paying and they're doing a workout at a CrossFit gym. And then,
oh, cool.
I will go do different events if they have some kind of connection to something I've got a network in. So we poured at the World War II Glider Pilots Association annual dinner last fall. So these different types of events are ones I enjoy doing. So when I retire, this is what I want to do. And I've wanted to do something like this for many years.
Man, you guys are awesome. This is such like a wonderful effort that you guys are spearheading, and it seems so practical to me that the winery is the means to provide access to your broader mission statement around supporting veterans and allowing them to sort of meet goals within the agricultural community. I could not be more appreciative of your time again, Ben, and for yours, Leanne, to sit down with me today. I won't take up any more of it. You guys need to go get back out and keep doing the wonderful work you all are doing. But I'll give you the chance to have the last word here, right? Is there anything, Leanne and then Ben, that I'm not asking you that I should be?
Ben, you go first.
You know, Michael, it's always great to be on your podcast. I really appreciate you having us again. It's been a long time since we've been on here. Going back to the donor thing, you know, angel investors and big donors are great, but, you know, the small individual contributions are huge for us too. Anybody that's willing to do a reoccurring donation is huge. You know, if somebody's willing to do $10, $50, $100 a month back to us, that helps cover the basic costs of just operating on a daily basis. You know, if you can't donate a ton of money or anything like that, just having that reoccurring donation be consistent, that's huge for us too. So not to talk, you know, the small donor is our bread and butter. So anybody out there that's listening that wants to help our mission, you know, a reoccurring donation would be more than appreciated, because it really helps us at the end of the day. And then, you know, we're just trying to do good work at the end of the day. We're just trying to help our brothers and sisters. And if there are any veterans out there listening to this that are interested in agriculture, please reach out to us. I field a lot of different questions from a lot of different aspects, from starting your own business to starting your own farm, And if I don't know the answer, I'll put you in the direction where you can find it. So again, Michael, thank you for your time and everything you do for farmers.
Anytime, Ben. Leanne.
Okay. So, and I'll throw this out there because I'll be representative of my community. So women veterans or people that maybe didn't grow up around a farming community or agriculture, don't be afraid to go do something outside your comfort zone. You do not have to leave the military and go be a government contractor or go work civil service. You can take a risk, you can get out there and you can start asking those questions. So similarly to Ben's end, he fields them to where he can. That is our job. That is our goal, is to help people be connected and networked in an area where they can. And if we can't help them, we know somebody who can. So cast the wide net, ask the questions, take your risk, and help each other.
This was such an enjoyable episode for me, to be able to bounce back and forth between two passionate supporters of the veteran and agricultural communities. I learned a ton about what can be a mutually beneficial relationship between a for-profit and nonprofit entity, and some of the practical reasons for why Ben and his wife Carrie set things up the way they did. Ben was honest with their struggles early on in the process of getting their first loan from the USDA, and I have to believe that shaped the structure of their current nonprofit, Dauntless Veteran Foundation, to be more flexible and supportive of as many different veteran efforts as possible. $300,000 of largely unsolicited requests across 20-plus farmers and operators surely communicates a need amongst veteran farmers that's not being met. So if you're an individual capable of making even a small reoccurring monthly donation, a one-time donation, if you're a private company or even another foundation looking to put funds to work in a local community for military veterans, please consider reaching out to Dauntless Veteran Foundation, Ben or Leanne, to explore further. Both of them are on LinkedIn, or you can go to www.dauntlessvf.org. That's Dauntless, V for Victor, F for Foxtrot.org to learn more. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Vets and Ag podcast, brought to you by AGD Consulting. If you enjoyed this episode and think other military veterans and supporters would benefit from these insights and stories, please give us a review and share on social media. You can also find previous episodes and learn more about AGD Consulting by visiting our website. Finally, if you have any recommendations of future guests who are military veterans or supporters leading the way in agribusiness, ag tech, or agripreneurship, please send them our way. I'm your host, Mike DeSa, and until next time, stay frosty.